Hey, First Things First listeners, before we start the show, I wanted to tell you about our brand new Fox Sports app and website, foxsports.com, reimagined for the modern sports fan. Go ahead, download the new app right now. You don't even have to pause this episode. Every day on the new app and website, you'll see the top stories in sports, plus a rich world of written content, videos, social media, and analytics to give you a 360-degree view of the most important stories of the day. Streaming live TV has never been so easy or elegant. Every Fox Sports game, including all pregame and postgame shows, as well as the televised version of this show, just a click away. For the extra invested fan, we also go deep with real-time wagering lines, trending prop bets, win probability, and key player projections. So download the new Fox Sports app or visit www.foxsports.com. Now let's start the show. First things first, the Chiefs turn to Chad Henne to pull off a game-winning play nobody saw coming. Can anyone beat Aaron Rodgers and the Packers after what we watched on Saturday? And how is our guy Nick getting ready for his lost Buffalo Bills bet? Two words, my friends, mustard and ketchup and lots of it. Good Monday morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Brandon Marshall, Kevin Wilds. We have so much to talk about. Bets were made, bets weren't made.
Good morning,
but Nick, I got to start with you. You got to believe in Buffalo. It's time to pay the piper, buddy.
Well, Wednesday will be time to pay the piper. Listen, why focus on my missteps? Brandon Marshall went 4-0 this weekend. Let's shovel praise instead of scrutiny.
I decide where to focus.
It doesn't sound negative. It's not good for ratings.
Brandon, idiots. Only
we got a ton to get to, but we will start right here in New Orleans, Bucks and Saints. Hey, coming in, remember we made this the Brady versus Breeze battle. It turned into Brady taking advantage of what Breeze couldn't do battle. Breeze couldn't protect the ball. Three costly picks in what is rumored to be his final game. We'll have more on that in a second. As Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers capitalize fully on their turnovers, they get the win. They move on. 30-20 was your final. Nick, I listen, all season long, you have not believed in the GOAT being as good as he was yesterday and has been during the playoffs. Is it time to admit you were wrong about Brady and the Bucs now?
Yeah, so this is where we're starting. All right, so
this is where we're starting, my friend.
Here's the deal, folks. Brady, obviously, was not the story yesterday. And he's probably had 15 to 20 playoff games better than the one we saw yesterday.
Sure.
But seeing Brady juxtaposed with Breeze and seeing what a 40-plus-year-old quarterback is supposed to look like, a la Drew Brees, and seeing Tom Brady still just ticking along, not making any huge mistakes in his 14th conference championship game, it's half maddening and half marvelous. Peyton Manning retired 5 years ago. Eli Manning retired last year. Philip Rivers is about to retire. Big Ben, best I can tell, took Wilds' advice, retired at halftime a week ago. And Drew Brees on his way out. And then there's Tom. Older than all of them, except for Peyton, and outlasting all of them. It's remarkable. So I have to give the man credit. It is remarkable that he's still out there. Now, was he great yesterday? No. Was he the big reason they won? No. But he wasn't the reason they lost.
Ooh.
And once again, he's in the Final Four. So, like, Brandon, if you'd have told me 5 years ago Tom Brady'd still be playing, I'd say, get out of here. And when I saw his season end with a pick six last year, I was like, finally, Jason is dead. They put the knife through his heart. Nope, he's reanimated in Tampa. So, I guess I was wrong because he's still playing. He's somehow still playing, Brandon.
Okay, so before I get into my take, and I'm going somewhere totally different. Didn't even think about going here, but I just want to respond to what you just said. after everything you just said, Nick, does this change your perspective on Tom Brady? Because it's not only been this year, it's been the last 5 years or so that you've been saying, oh, Brady is done.
5 years.
We're praising LeBron James, right, for being this dude who takes care of himself and he's playing at a high level at 36. Now you have a quarterback at 43 playing at this level. And I push back on you here. I push back that he had a big part of the reason why they were successful yesterday. And this whole thing, before I throw it back to you really quickly, this whole thing of him being 43 and this him being old, well, this is what you're supposed to do. Like, you go back to where the NFL was and the NBA was 20 years ago, technology and science wasn't the same. Guys wasn't, you know, eating right. Guys were smoking cigarettes in the locker room. So when you look at Tom Brady at 43, this is where the NFL player, NBA players supposed to be. So my question for you is, does this change the perspective around Tom Brady for you?
Well, listen, I never deny that he's the greatest quarterback, the greatest resume of all time. Like, so it's not like he had something more to prove, but it does. Here's what I would say to that, Brandon. Is the reason the LeBron comparisons to me have fallen short is we have seen the statistical evidence of Brady's, you know, call it mild decay over the last few years. You hadn't seen that with LeBron. And when you say this is where the modern athlete's supposed
That's
to
true.
Be, except none of the other modern quarterbacks are there. Breeze can't throw 10 yards. Rivers is done. Ben is throwing half a dozen picks. Eli, like, all the guys in his age group are done. And he's not.
That's
so
not
I
true,
just think he's a,
I like it.
I mean, I got to give him credit. I mean, Brandon, I have to give him credit. He's once again still standing.
That's right.
Somehow.
I appreciate that.
It's so frustrating. So frustrating. Wilds, that's your guy.
All right, well, I'll help you out here, Nick. I think the Bucs defense obviously won that game because they made the plays that the Saints defense couldn't, because Tom Brady tried to give them a few plays and they opted not to catch the ball. They held Breeze, the Bucs defense held Breeze to under 134 yards, exactly. Michael Thomas had zero catches. They forced four turnovers. But here are these plays from Brady. This one, Brandon, if he gets his toe down here, Marcus Williams, this is an interception. Later in the game, Tom Brady gives another that could have gone back for a pick six. So I say the Bucs defense won the game here because they made the plays. They forced those turnovers. Tom Brady has another one. This isn't even the one that could have gone for a pick six.
Yeah, but wow.
So I'm saying Tom Brady played great, but he threw for under 200 yards. I love Tom Brady, but I'm not ready to say like this was an amazing game for Tom Brady. This is all Bucs defense.
So all last week I was talking about Baker Mayfield and that one interception, and we've been talking about how me and Nick got into this big argument about it. The reason why I was so heated about that is because everything matters in the game. That's the difference. You can turn on any game and see, you know, oh, well, this guy could have made this play, or that guy should have made that play, or this coach should have did that. That's why when you get out there, everything matters. So, yeah, we can show all those plays we want from Tom Brady, but the reality is those guys didn't capitalize off of his mistakes, and that's why are going home, and Tom Brady is advancing to his 14th championship game.
All right, so let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is Drew Brees and what this means for him moving forward. Our guy Jay Glazer reporting before kickoff that Sunday would be Drew Brees' final game if the Saints lost. And you're watching video of Tom Brady and Drew Brees on the field afterwards. Just having a moment to discuss. Brees didn't make any official announcement after the game. He was seen, like we said, enjoying that moment on the field with Tom Brady. Brees did say that he's going to sit down and think about his future, and that yesterday's performance, which was not great, would not impact his decision. Brandon, should Drew Brees return for one more year?
No, it's over. It's done. I mean, look. first off, before I even get into it, great job, Drew Brees. I mean, phenomenal career. Broke so many records. He's going down as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, one of the greatest football players of all time, one of the greatest competitors of all time. Look, I was there for a month, my last cup of tea. I sat there and saw this guy rock in the mirror back and forth, you know, for 30 minutes, just going through his game plan and his routine. This dude took the game to a whole nother level. So many younger quarterbacks try to mimic their games off of him. But the reality is 99% of all players don't go out on their terms. They don't. This whole fairy tale story around, like, you know, Ray Lewis and John Elway just doesn't happen. You're not going to be able to go out on your terms. So, you know, he'll probably go into the booth. The Saints probably need to move on at the quarterback position from Jameis Winston. I know he's there, but I'm looking at a guy like Russell Wilson is out there. Maybe Coach Sean Payton will appreciate him more than they do out there in Seattle trying to go back to running the ball on first and second, third down. So you got Drew Brees going into the booth, and if I'm the New Orleans Saints, I go out there and go get Russell Wilson.
All right, so couple things here. The Brandon just dropped a bomb in the middle of the show. That's Brandon Marshall not so subtly telling America that Russell Wilson might be able to be had, which is something we obviously should spend a lot of time on at some point. Now on also about Brandon Marshall, Saints fans who have been populating Brandon's mentions all day, his Twitter handle hasn't changed.
Yeah.
His Instagrams haven't changed. Everything he said about your team in the offseason was correct. And as great Brees, first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks of all time, what he did for that city, that franchise, no one can take it away from him. What is also true is this. Since they won the Super Bowl a decade ago, they have 4 7-9 seasons and 5 total playoff victories. And those 5 playoff victories, by the way, came against Stafford, Foles, Cam, Foles again, and Mitch Trubisky. That is the definition of squandering the last decade of an all-time great quarterback. Right. We talk about Green Bay not, you know, being able to make the most of Rodgers' window. The Saints' window with Brees is over. And the last decade was for nothing, and that's got to kill you if you're a Saints fan. So be mad at that instead of being mad at Brandon for being correct, Jim.
Or do both. All right, so the Bucs are headed to Green Bay for the NFC Championship. You know who else is advancing after this weekend?
Chad Henne
and the Kansas City Chiefs. A very big call by Andy Reid. Kudos to him. Back after this.
Big call.
What's up, First Thing First listeners? It's your boy, Shay Sharp, co-host of FS1's Undisputed. I wanted to tell you about my new podcast, Club Shay Shay, where we always do something before two something. Each week, I sit down with a guest for a drink and conversation, and as host and proprietor of Club Shay Shay, I welcome in esteemed guests such as Snoop Dogg, Floyd Money Mayweather, LeVar Ball, Isaiah Thomas, just to mention a few. Whether I'm talking to an athlete, a musician, an actor, or a lifelong friend, Club Shay Shay is a place where people share inspiring and motivational stories about their journeys to prominence. The new episode drops every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to Club Shay Shay now and make sure you never miss a new episode. Now, back to First Things First.
Let's head to Kansas City now. This game was supposed to be the most lopsided game of the weekend, remember? But Chiefs, without Patrick Mahomes for the final quarter plus after he suffered a concussion, were able to do something with Chad Henne under center that nobody thought possible. Coming down to this fourth down play at the end of the game, nobody thought Chiefs would actually run a play here. But look at that, the pass to Tyreek Hill. And that would be your ball game, Chad Henne. Chiefs are moving on. Browns can call it a great season. Baker Mayfield, a great game. I will give them both credit. But Nick must have polished off 6 rolls of Tums watching this one. Nick, how did your Chiefs get the win with Mahomes sidelined?
Tums. Jenna, never a doubt. Chiefs, by the way, only team this weekend to after 0-0 never trail or be tied in any game. Dominated the whole game. Never a question. That's why you have depth on your team. No Sammy Watkins. No Clyde Edwards-Helaire. No Patrick Mahomes. No problem. Chad Henne can do it. Okay, in reality, that was terrible.
Never a doubt.
Oh, my God, was that scary. Okay, so
here we go.
So here's the deal, folks. I want to spotlight a few moments. One of them is going to be totally forgotten to history. I think Chris Jones is the second best player on this entire team. He had a very quiet game. But when the Chiefs were up 5, holding on for dear life, and the Browns facing a 3rd-and-11, Chris Jones did this. And this won't show up in any stat sheet, but it was as big as the 4th-down conversion. Watch Jones up the middle. He forces the ball out of Baker's hands. You might say, why does that matter? The other angle would show you Baker has a guy running wide open for a 1st down, and they probably go down and score. So Chris Jones forces the ball out of his hands early. It's a massive play. And then Chad Henne makes not one, not two, but 3 great plays. 3rd-and-4 makes the right read. He has Tyreek and Travis Kelce up top. Romo saying he's going to go up top. No, he goes down low. 3rd-and-14 makes an all-time moment with this run, not just staying in bounds, but getting it to where the 4th down was possible to even consider going for. And then Henne and Andy Reid's, let's call it intestinal fortitude combined for one of the most audacious plays I've ever seen. Brandon, that play makes a ton of sense with Patrick Mahomes. When 10 minutes prior,
it makes sense with him in there.
Well, when 10 minutes prior, Chad Henne had thrown an arm punt into the end zone to trust him, to trust your guys, as if Mahomes is out there, it's remarkable, and it's why the Chiefs are moving on as brave of a play call as I've ever seen in NFL history by Andy Reid right there, Brandon.
Right. I mean, this was an interesting call. And yeah, they ran this all year. This is old school West Coast. You go back to the 49ers days, you know, sprint right option. You know, that number one wide receiver's job is to clear it out and, you know, he'll be the second option. But really, if that flat isn't there, you have nothing. So it's 4th-and-inches. Game is on the line. I mean, you're playing against the Cleveland Browns. You're trying to repeat and you call that and it actually hits. That's just a phenomenal play, phenomenal execution by Andy Reid to Chad Henne. Chad Henne was the reason why they held on and they won this game. Let's go back to week 17. You sit Patrick Mahomes. He get real-time reps. So he's coming into this game feeling comfortable, you know, taking those snaps. And he played well. You highlighted those plays. But you got to think about what we talked about, probably what, week 6, week 7 after they beat the Buffalo Bills Wilds? What did we talk about? Like, this team is a better team this year compared to last because they're a more complete team. They, last year, were just winning with Patrick Mahomes and how magical he was. Every time you turned on the highlights, this dude was throwing some type of beautiful pass, no-look pass, sidearm, left hand. And this year, they're beating you in the run game. They're beating you with other players. They're beating you on defense. Special teams is stepping up and getting the job done. So I wasn't surprised that they was able to hold on, Wilds, because this team is complete.
Yeah. Yeah, so they seem super confident in all aspects of the game. And Nick, I was surprised you were so worried. The one first down play, this is just the play to get the 1 yard that they ran against the Dolphins. So how are they going to run that play? I'm so surprised. I wasn't surprised. I was like, oh, they're going to run that little Dolphins play. So the fact that they ran it with Henne rather than Mahomes, I just feel like Andy Reid has confidence in the guys, just like Brandon said. And the fact that and Romo mentioned it too during the game, the fact that Henne played week 17, we all viewed it as a rest for Mahomes. It was actually to give him some rep. Then, of course, Henne thinks it's possible. When we talk about preparation, you always got to be prepared for your life after football. Henne pulls a page from Wolford's book, Jenna. Going with the LinkedIn page. Congratulations, Chad Henne. Prepared for everything. Prepared to get first downs. Prepared for life after football.
All right, so there was another moment I wanted to... Go ahead, Nick. No, I was going to target to a play. But, all right, I want to talk about this. Before halftime, Browns were trying to make it a one-score game. So watch this. Rashard Higgins looked like he was going to score. He fumbles through the end zone, turning it over to the Chiefs. Head coach Kevin Stefanski was asked about the play after the game. Listen to what he had to say.
I will never, ever doubt Rashard Higgins' effort or our guys' effort. Our rule there is not to reach the ball out. It's first and goal, and he knows that. So, again, appreciate his effort. He battled like he always does, but we got to fight that urge because it's such a big loss if it does end up being a touchback.
So, Brandon, take us into Higgins' mindset on this play. What should and shouldn't be done here?
Mindset good, intentions are good. He's trying to score, right? But this is when the inexperience comes in. When we talk about situational football, this is situational football. It's not always 4-minute drill. It's not always 2-minute drill, red zone offense, red zone defense. This is situational football. As a player, you know, because these are discussions that we have internally. Look, when you get down there, even on third down, it's third and one, and you're in the field, protect the football. We say it all year on this show. Ball security is job security, yours and mine. So as a veteran player, someone who's been in this position before, you know that, look, if I don't have it and if it's not clear, I'm going to protect the ball and I'm going to live to see another down. This just highlights that this Browns team had a successful year, but they need to continue to have these moments to learn so they can get over the hump and go to the next level. He'll learn from this and he'll be better next time around.
All right, so the Chiefs host the Bills in the AFC title game next weekend. We got to take a turn. Time for Knicks NBA medals. James Harden back in action this weekend, dazzled in his Nets debut Saturday. 32 points and a triple-double, but he just missed out on Knicks medal stand. Nick, who did make your podium?
James, 9 turnovers is the reason he didn't make it. Very interesting weekend in the league. I'll be quick here. Bronze medalist, my large adult Slovenian son, 36, 16, and 15. He was pacing towards a gold, but cooled off in the second half, and they lost, so he gets the bronze medal. Silver medalist, another silver in a rare loss. Rarely you get a medal in a loss, but we're giving two of them today. De'Aaron Fox, 43, 13, and 4 in a great game against the Pelicans. Zion was spectacular. He almost made the medal stand as well, but De'Aaron Fox was the best. And then Brandon, gold medalist, the old Slim Reaper, 42 points, efficient, 42, 4, and 5. I actually thought he was better than Harden in that win over the Magic. He's been spectacular all year long. He's the gold medalist, right. Kevin Durant. That are your NBA medals from this weekend.
Nick, I felt like this was the moment where you could have probably given the entire Brooklyn Nets team a goal. You got to think about what's happening right now. Chemistry issues, and will they be able to fit? And James Harden's out of shape. He comes in, drop 30. This dude drops 42. And then every guys around him, the coaches included, just stood up and got the job done in their very first game. So I felt like this was your opportunity to highlight the entire Brooklyn Nets team.
Hey, listen, KD and Harden were great, Jenna. 5-point win over the Magic. Been great.
All right, well. Guys, the Buffalo Bills did it. They won 2 playoff games. What does that mean? It means nothing for the Bills. It means everything for Nick Wright, who will be showered in ketchup and mustard come Wednesday afternoon. It is next. First.
Yes, baby. Let's go.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Hey, First Things First listeners, it's Charlotte Wilder here to tell you about my new podcast with Mark Titus called The People's Sports Podcast. It comes out every Thursday, and Mark and I take one of the big stories of the week, and then we go off on tangents you never saw coming. This might mean that we start talking about the Dodgers winning the World Series and end up wondering if Knicks fans deserve happiness, or begin with LeBron's greatness and end up drafting our ultimate beer league softball team made up of old athletes. Whatever it is, the only rule of the show is that it has to be fun and funny, because these days we could all use as many laughs as we can get. So check it out wherever you get your podcasts and come down weird sports rabbit holes with us. We can't wait to have you. Now, back to First Things First.
In honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Kurt Menefee and Michael Strahan are hosting an hour-long special highlighting the efforts of athletes creating change in their communities. Fox Sports Voices today, 5 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. And before we get back to the games, wanted to take a second to talk about this day. Brandon, I'll start with you. What does MLK Day mean to you?
Everything. I'm sitting here occupying this seat, right, as a broadcaster. And I also played 13 years in the National Football League. I think if Martin Luther King was here today, he would be proud of where we're at. We had a black president, Barack Obama. He had 2 terms, 8 years in office. That's amazing when you think about his dream that he had, his vision that he had. We have black and brown people occupying amazing spaces, not only in this country, but in this world. Black billionaires. But I also think he would still be marching. I think that he would be here today still fighting for equality. He still would be fighting the injustices in our world. And he would also be fighting for just fundamental human rights. 2020 has shown us that we are not where we need to be. And I think MLK would be on both ends of the spectrum. He would be proud because of the advances we made, but he also would be marching to continue this movement of making sure that everybody have the rights that they should have and just fundamental human rights.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, Brandon. That was beautifully said. I personally believe Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is the most impressive and the most important person this country has ever produced. And I would encourage anyone and everyone, especially those with children that want to talk about Dr. King today, to set aside anything from the I Have a Dream speech and instead focus on what I think is the most important document he ever wrote, which is Letter from Birmingham Jail, which I think further illustrates and better illustrates his vision, his feelings, and the actions that he felt we are all obligated to take in order to create a more just society. Now, it's not the warm and fuzzy MLK that you hear about in school, but it is maybe the more honest MLK, and I think in this moment, the more important MLK. So as much as we love that image of him standing on the National Mall that we have in the bottom corner delivering that uplifting speech, a letter he wrote not on the National Mall but behind a jail cell is maybe more instructive and more useful in this moment.
Yeah, with everything happening in the country right now, his words are never more necessary and needed in time right now. And we all have kids the same age, and one of the more curious parts of learning about MLK when you have young children is first you have to learn that the world is unfair. You have to teach them that the world is unfair. So the first thing you start, like, there are unfair laws, and they're immediately confused by that. So Jenna, I look forward to spending the day continuing these lessons with my family and my kids and getting back to the true essence and spirit of the way this country is supposed to be.
Well, I will piggyback what you said as well, just that we do all have young kids, and having this conversation with them throughout the day is a great, great way for them to understand that honoring MLK's birthday is a way for all of us to take a moment and consider that there's clearly work that still needs to be done in this country today and moving forward. And the fight that he waged, the noble fight that he waged, embracing peace to achieve equality, I think is something that we can all reflect on as we stop today, pause, think about it, and moving forward. And with that, we will take a turn, play a little draw in a blank, get back to some sports now. Well, the Deshaun Watson saga has rounded yet another corner with a new report. The Texans have had conversations about potential trade partners. Wow. Brandon, the team that should go all out to trade for Deshaun Watson is blank.
This team has everything they need to get this deal done. They also have everything they need to have a successful year next year. They got two first rounders, one second rounder, two third rounders, and they have a ton of cap space. This team is the New York Jets. This team right here can get the deal done. And Deshaun, you also got to think about your brand. You know, they keep talking about you being the next Michael Jordan. They keep talking about you being a superstar, potentially being a top three, top four quarterback now. What better market? What other market can you go into to get that done?
New York,
the number one media market in the world. Let's go, Deshaun. There's no other team out there ready for you besides the Jets. Let's go.
Listen, I'd love to have Deshaun in New York as well. And if he came here, Brandon, he'd be right there with you and me at Nets games. You already said you bought the courtside tickets. I'm sure you can afford a third one. It'd be great. But Deshaun ain't winning a Super Bowl with the Jets next year. He could, and I think would be the overwhelming favorite to win a Super Bowl with the Niners. Deshaun Watson, with Kyle Shanahan, with Kittle back, with Bosa back, even though they just lost their D coordinator, that is the perfect fit. The Niners could trade Garoppolo and get some of the draft compensation back that they would need to then go trade for Deshaun. I think the best case for him is to go to San Francisco. That offense, those weapons, that coach. I think the Niners would be the most terrifying team in the league if they acquired Deshaun Wilds.
I like that take, and if you want to trade Garoppolo to New England for something and put that in a deal, that makes sense. But Nick Caserio needs to have earmuffs here. There is no package deal that you are going to get that is going to replace Deshaun Watson. And Nick Caserio, Brandon, who spent his entire career with the Patriots, most recent part of his career with the Patriots, has seen the success of a franchise with a franchise QB. And now the Patriots are sitting at home, and their franchise QB is one game away from the Super Bowl. So don't tell me, oh, Deshaun's not returning texts. Deshaun's not returning a phone call. All right, did he return the Rolex that you sent him? Did he return the $1 million donation to his favorite charity? Did he return the edible arrangement? It's not texts and phone calls, fellas.
Oh, I love
it's
those.
Whatever it takes to keep Deshaun Watson in a Texans uniform.
That's right.
That is a fantastic.
They absolutely shouldn't do it. That's right.
On to this week's action. Old Tom Brady looked like Tom Brady of old as the Bucs handled the Saints last night. But Brandon, the best player performance from the weekend was blank.
Easy answer here. Chad Henne, one of my ex-quarterbacks, one of my 17 quarterbacks. For him to come in and play the way he played was impressive because they had everything on the line here. This is a team that can easily go back and repeat and win the Super Bowl. So for him to come in and this play right here, third and 14, game's on the line, and he get it done with his feet, get him within fourth and inches, and then they call old school West Coast sprint right option. Nobody would call this play besides Andy Reid, and he executed to the T. You got to go with Chad Henne because now they advance. They give their quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, a week to heal up, get right, and now they can go compete against the Buffalo Bills. Chad Henne.
Obviously, Brandon has the right answer, but because he went 4-0 this weekend, he gets to go first on all these, so I am relegated to the second best answer. So I'll go with the second best quarterback performance of the weekend, which was Aaron Rodgers. Number one defense, number one defense. Jalen Ramsey, who gives a damn? I'm still hanging 32. So Aaron Rodgers, to me, got the best performance of the weekend, controlling every phase of that game, running one touchdown into boot, three total touchdowns. Wilds, he's my performance of the weekend.
Okay, my performance of the weekend was the disciplined ref who did not give Tom Brady a high five. Your old buddy Kevin Wilds, one of the things that makes him your old buddy, Willing to give high fives, willing to get high fives. I don't care, you're a stranger on the street, throw it up. OKW is there for you. It's good camaraderie. So the fact that this ref, who they never even get to high five each other, Brandon, even in games, if they make a great call, the refs still have to sit there. So the amount of discipline that he has, when he sees the GOAT come over and be like, hey, buddy, you're doing a good job too.
He was shell-shocked.
And you don't give him high fives. Excellent, excellent job. That is just the pinnacle of performance from this referee.
I would have shook his hand.
I would have just given him a hug. Shaking his hand. I would have given him a hug. Baker and the Browns coming up just short, but they did answer a ton of questions about their future with a nice playoff run. Brandon, though, the team with the most question marks coming out of the weekend is blank.
Ooh, the Saints. The New Orleans Saints.
Oh.
You guys crushed me all year. I had to sit here for months.
Tell them.
Waiting to
Tell
address
him,
this.
Get,
waiting for this opportunity.
Yeah.
Look, I said it before the year. I said, look, they'll win the division. They'll be awesome in the regular season. And what's going to happen in the postseason? The same thing that happened the last 2 years. They implode. Why? Because you have Alvin Kamara and you have Michael Thomas, who makes up almost 50% of your offense. You take one or two of those guys out, which most teams do in the playoffs, and then you have nothing. You lose. You have Drew Brees, who could have easily won you a handful of Super Bowls. You got a defense that somehow, second half of their seasons, year after year after year, they turn into the most elite defense, and you don't get it done. So for me, it's the Saints. You got Drew Brees. He's retiring probably. You got all these question marks around the quarterback position. And I just think they need an entire revamp of their philosophy and approach, because their football is good, but when it get really sticky in those big moments, this is what happens. Yep. So what I would do if I'm Coach Sean Payton, I would actually go get Russell Wilson, insert him, and then we'll see what happens with that offense and how they go to another level.
Lead the show. I also agree that a lot of teams should go get Russell Wilson. Brandon keeps telling the audience Russell Wilson might be available. I don't know if anyone's going to pick up what he's dropping down. But listen, today is the day of Brandon's prophecies coming true, which is good, because next Monday, my two Super Bowl teams are going to beat Brandon's two Super Bowl teams. So next Monday will be my day. But today is Brandon's day, so I'm going to go with another take of Brandon's head, which is, hey, Greg Roman, can you design an offense that'll work in the postseason? So I say the Ravens. Fact of the matter is this. Lamar got the playoff monkey off his back, and then it jumped right back on it with this play. And now with another very shaky passing performance in the postseason, real questions about, is Lamar, as I have questioned, currently the Giannis of the NBA, of the NFL, unbelievable, dynamic, unguardable in the regular season, but some holes in the offense and holes in the game that rear their head in the postseason. Ravens got to figure out who they want to be and how they can be that. So to me, it's the Ravens Wilds.
Yeah, I'm going with the Rams. And here's some sound of Sean McVay postgame talking about his $100 million franchise quarterback. Take a listen.
I think he did a nice job, Bill. I thought he improved on last week. I think you really saw a guy that stepped in and he did what he could. I thought he made some plays. Thought he saw the field well, like I was mentioning. He did a good job today.
He's your quarter. Is he your quarterback?
Yeah, he's a quarterback, right?
Buddy, that's your franchise quarterback. So there's something going on here. They do not like Goff. I don't know if he's going to be on the move. They try to offload his contract. But that is not the way that Pete Carroll, for example, talks about Russ Wilson. Nope. Even though Brandon has Russell Wilson out of Seattle. It's the biggest story we're not talking about today, Jenna.
Deshaun out,
all right,
Russell
let's get
out.
Back to this weekend's playoff
it's
action.
Crazy.
Bills defense shutting down Lamar, and now Nick's got a price to pay. Ketchup, mustard, all that goodness.
Talking about,
it's next.
Guys,
first things first.
Guys, so we're running out of rights on this video.
This is happening.
Guys.
It's happening.
Back here talking Bills and Ravens. Hey, we were promised two great young quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, but the story clearly in this game was that Bills defense shut Lamar down all night, couldn't get anything going. Then Lamar forced to leave in the third after suffering a concussion. Tough night overall for him. Buffalo Bills get the win. They live to see another day. And for our guy Nick Wright, it's the Pinto Ron treatment come Wednesday. That is what they do to diehard Buffalo Bills fans. Nick, right. In preparation for that, you posted this video Sunday morning,
so nasty,
stockpiling the ketchup, the mustard.
Yeah, I know.
Get ready for Wednesday. I just want to make sure you remember what you did here. Mike Vick joining us now to break it all down. Mike, we're going to get to that in a second, but let's talk about the game. How did the Bills beat the Ravens without Josh Allen having a huge game?
Jenna, you just said it. We were supposed to get a game with two great young quarterbacks. Now, I won't take anything away from Josh Allen and what they did. They came out and threw the ball 25 straight times. On the flip side, the Baltimore Ravens came out and ran the ball 20 straight times. And, you know, I don't know what type of game plan that was or what the philosophy was behind that. But first and foremost, you're going against Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott, two of the best defensive minds in the game. That's just not possible. So it's no way that you can win a game like that. And as many things as I want to say, you know, I got to point out Lamar Jackson and his play. His play was reflective of the offense. I think Lamar came out and did everything that he was asked to do. This is not an indictment on Lamar as far as the loss. The interception that he threw in the end zone, that was him just pressing and trying. But when your offense is that vanilla and run, that run
oriented. Ooh, that was big, though.
It's only been so much that you can do. So Lamar was held in a box, and it was unfortunate to see that. You know, I like what the Buffalo Bills did with Josh Allen. They opened the doors. They opened the floodgates, and they let him just throw it around and have fun playing backyard football. That's what he do. But for Lamar Jackson, it was all run-oriented, and that's not the way you develop and win games in this league.
Yeah, but Mike, going into this offseason, that organization or Greg Roman, if they keep him, they decide to keep him, they need to have a shift in their philosophy and their approach to offense. But also Lamar Jackson. Lamar needs to also do his part. We know who he is as a quarterback. We also know who he is as a runner, how dynamic he is. But he also needs to develop, you know, and go to the next level as a passer as well. There was a few times where, you know, his feet wasn't right and he was just going off of pure ability. So I think if Lamar does his part, the organization do their part, we're going to see a better Baltimore Ravens team next year because they're going to go as far as Lamar take them. But Nick.
Yeah.
Them Buffalo Bills, I've been trying to tell you for 6 or 7 weeks, buddy. Well, do you believe now? Yeah. Do you believe?
Well, so I want to talk about Lamar, but let me answer that question first. I absolutely believe that, listen, the Bills, as Vic said, put the game entirely in Josh Allen's hands, and he rewarded them with 10 points on offense, and I thought didn't turn the ball over, played pretty well. Had another one of those fumbles bounce right to an offensive lineman. It's lucky. We'll see how that works next week. They said, we're never going to run the football. We're going to throw all first half. And they went to halftime with 3 points. But that's fine. We'll see how it works next week. The story here is the Ravens. The story here is Lamar. And listen, it's terrible bad luck that Justin Tucker, the greatest kicker I've ever seen. Sorry, Wild. Sorry, Vinatieri. Right. Tucker's the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, okay.
And he's just clanking field goals off uprights. I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. But because of that, instead of it being 10-9, it's 10-3, and you're pressing a bit, and Lamar misses a wide-open Hollywood Brown because he's pressured, and on the next play, the game's over. The pick six ended the football game. And I think we all really like Lamar as a guy. Vic and Brandon know him personally. Jenna just declared him her favorite athlete. I've been a fan of his since he was at Louisville. But I also think it is important not to condescend to him or patronize to him as if he is someone that needs to be protected. He is a superstar NFL player, the reigning unanimous MVP, and we need to talk about him as such, which is to say, the single most damaging play that was made in the NFL this weekend was this throw right there. It turned what could have been, at worst, a 10-6 game, maybe a 10-10 game, into a 17-3 blowout because the Ravens offense couldn't get anything going. Now, Wilds, a lot of those Ravens offensive struggles, I do put on the game plan. I do put on the coaches. I do put on what Brandon's been preaching 100%. All year, which is that Greg Roman isn't developing him as a passer throughout the year. So it's not all on Lamar. But you obviously can't absolve him of what was another really rough passing game in the playoffs.
I mean, look at who he's throwing the ball to.
Something he's got
to
get going.
Look at who he's throwing the ball to. He's throwing the ball to a tight end. Like, honestly, I watched this game, and I don't think I've seen a receiver in a formation the entire game. And they was out there. So what I'm saying is the receivers didn't show up in the offense nowhere, and that's on Greg Roman. Last week, Hollywood Brown caught 7 passes for 109 yards. Where was Hollywood Brown? He didn't catch one screen, one pass out the backfield. He didn't catch one pass, one shallow cross, one hook route. He's the second best player on the offense. He didn't even show up. If you can't design plays to get the ball into the hands of the playmakers, then why are you the offensive coordinator? The guy who understands the passing game and knows it came up under that Andy Reid tree is behind Greg Roman.
So, Mike, I'm going to show you a graphic that Lamar's had to run the ball the entire amount of his career, that the Ravens have run the ball basically 56% of the time since his first start. Now that he's the MVP and they've had 2 playoff flameouts, what power or leverage does he have to come in and say, like, look, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired of running the ball so much and having our offense run the ball so much. It doesn't have a clever hashtag like, you know, let Russ cook. But what are the next steps for Lamar within the organization to turn the offense around?
I know exactly what Lamar was feeling towards the end of that game. It gets to a point where the rubber meets the road and it's nothing else that you can do. You done did everything you could. Two years in a row, you ran the football effectively. You ran the offense effectively to the best of your abilities and did everything the coaches have asked you to do. But it's always next level. If Lamar had Andy Reid, Lamar wouldn't run the ball half as much as he run the football. And they're using him like a running back. They're looking at his talents, and it's almost what happened to me when I was young. Looking at his talents, we can win with this. This is all we have to do. No, it's next level. You have to get everybody involved, and the offense has to evolve, and that's the only way Lamar's going to evolve as a passer and get better. So right now, it's stuck between the rock and the hard spot, and there's some tough decisions have to be made for the Baltimore Ravens and the offense and the offensive coordinator and which direction they're going to go in.
And no matter what direction they go with the offensive coordinator, here's some free advice. You know what really helped Kyler Murray take a big leap? Trading for DeAndre Hopkins. You know what really helped Josh Allen take a leap? Trading for Stephon Diggs. I don't know what number one receiver, aside from Odell, we think is going to be available this offseason, but adding Dez Bryant ain't gonna do it, folks. If you're going to try to diversify this offense, and it's nothing, Brandon, against Hollywood Brown, but he needs a true number one receiver, and Lamar has to improve on his own volition as well.
No, I think you guys covered Lamar well. But before we go, Jenna, we got to talk about the Bills just a little bit more. There was a big question mark going into a question going into this game. Could this defense stand up? The defense, their biggest weakness was that front 7 being able to stop the run. And you're going against a Lamar Jackson-led team that can get it done on the ground. And what did they do? They stood up, they stood strong, and they stuffed the run for the most part. I mean, they had 150 yards or so on the ground. But when you eliminate that team to only being able to do one thing in a game, it makes it hard. Josh Allen didn't play great. But I've been saying it. This is probably the most complete offense or the most complete team in the playoffs right now. So when Josh Allen isn't playing great, look what happened. Leslie Frazier steps up, his defense steps up, and they get the job done. So you got to highlight that when you're talking about the Buffalo Bills. And Nick, going into next week, I'm telling you, and I've been telling you for a while, the Buffalo Bills are real, and they're the only team that can compete with them to advance into the Super Bowl. Talking about the Kansas City Chiefs there.
Well, we're going to get to see it.
Yep, it's going to be a fun right. AFC title game next weekend. All right, we got to take a turn, talk some Bucks and Saints now. Hey, how did Tom Brady have a less than stellar day and still beat Drew Brees? Figure that out next. First things first. Back here talking Packers and Rams from Saturday. Aaron Rodgers was flawless in this one, dismantling a Rams defense that ranked number one in pretty much everything, including Kevin Wild's heart. Wild, you sold me on this defense, and I bought in wholeheartedly. Well, the Packers were just too good. They go on to win. We win, though, also because Mike Vick is back with us now. Mike, were you surprised that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers offense handled this Rams defense so easily?
I wasn't surprised at all. It was everything that I envisioned. And while I do think the Green Bay Packers offense has been the most consistent offense of any team in the National Football League all season, you know, I just wasn't surprised that this happened against the Rams. And, you know, I thought the Rams would pose problems up front, and I was watching that closely, but the Green Bay Packers offense did a great job of containing Aaron Donald and allowing Aaron Rodgers to get the ball out of his hands quickly, which is what they do. And everybody else was just compliments. Aaron Jones, he did what he's always done and what we expected him to do, run the football effectively. And, you know, Devontae Adams played great. And I want to, at some point, Brandon, can you please elaborate on Scantlin and Lazard? Because I think those two guys have stepped up tremendously throughout the year, and they don't get enough credit. And people always saying Aaron Rodgers needed number two receiver. He needed another guy that he can count on other than Devontae Adams. But, you know, those guys always show up post routes, go routes. Is it the speed? What is it, the ability to make big plays? I think both of those guys have it enough to be effective, you know, in the NFC Championship game and if they make the Super Bowl.
They just need to be available, Vic. That's the thing. When you got a dog number one receiver in Devontae Adams on one side, and then you have these two guys or, you know, even the tight ends on the other, all you need is to be available. Because what's going to end up happening, you're going to see cover zero. You're going to see one-on-one against the number two, number three, number four option in the secondary. So all you got to do is beat your man. And I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I used to tell Eric Decker, I used to tell him all the time when he was with the Jets, like, bro, on first and second down, they're doubling me. Everywhere else is cover zero. So those go routes, those shot plays, putting the wide receivers in the slot, running the goes from there, it's literally lights out for you. If you beat him, then there's no one behind you. So I just think those guys just need to continue to be available. They just literally need to catch the ball. But I do want to say this, right? And I'll give my football analysis really quickly, because this, to me, was less about football, more about mindset. And for the last couple weeks, I've been saying that. Like, we don't talk enough about mindset when we talk about sports on TV. It's all about X's and O's. We want to peel back the layers with the stats, and we don't understand the dynamic between what's going on in these players' head between the ears. So from a football perspective, why did this happen? Because the thing that you do well, you didn't do well in this game. Look at Aaron Rodgers. I'm going to show you a clip of Aaron Rodgers post game. You have the best defense in the National Football League. You also have Aaron Donald. You have all these guys up front. There's no blade of grass on his jersey. Look at the 12. There's nothing on his chest. There's nothing on his arm. Like, the dude is super clean. And Will Blackman, he's the one that pointed this out right after the game. You had zero sacks. You had one quarterback pressure. So from a football perspective, that's why you lost this game. But now I'm pushing the conversation forward, going to mindset wilds. Aaron Rodgers, you got to understand what he's dealing with. You just drafted a quarterback. You pretty much wasted my career. You got one Super Bowl out of me. This may be the last opportunity that I have to get it done. So when you have that type of mentality, that championship mentality, you're going to go into every practice, every meeting, every game, just next level. The Tom Brady's of the world, the Michael Jordans of the world, the Serena Williams of the world, they just transcend to a whole nother level mentally, and sometimes we don't talk about it enough. So for me, Wilds, it was more about Aaron Rodgers and less about just X's and O's in football.
All right. I'll give you something about mindset, Brandon. I went to a vacation on the Caribbean one time, and I was going to jump off the boat and go swimming. And so, there's sharks in here.
So you got to be careful. I said, well, I'm not jumping. I'm very nervous. And then we went somewhere else. I was like, are there sharks here? And they're like, no, there's no sharks. They're like, oh, yeah, great day then. Great day for Aaron Rodgers. Let's go swimming, cannonballs off the boat. That's what happened to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Donald was nowhere to be found. I should have known this, and I feel lied to, Nick. When I should have known this, when he's like, he's wearing a military-grade protection. I'm like, you know what? That doesn't sound good at all. And the idea that's like, well, he's out. He had zero sacks. But, you know, next man up. Yep. Next man up doesn't work. There is no next man up. This proves that he's a defensive player of the year. It's like saying next man up if it's like Tom Cruise in Top Gun 2. Tom Cruise is out. Next man up. Nope. The whole thing falls apart. The secondary falls apart. Everything falls apart.
That's right.
So it's so brutal that Aaron Donald played about half the snaps. And it proves that he's the defensive player of the year because if he's not right, the whole thing goes down.
That's the right take, Wilds. Now, I think the Packers would have won either anyway, but it would have been a totally different game. But I think Aaron Donald's value has never been on further display than it was this weekend. I think, with no disrespect to Aaron Rodgers, I think a lot of people would argue the two best players in the whole league are Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Donald. And this weekend, we got to see how both of their teams looked with all that talent, with all that great coaching, with all those weapons, with Jalen Ramsey, whomever, when those two guys are out. And it's like, oh, the Chiefs score 0 points once Mahomes goes out of the game, except for a field goal on the drive that he got him downfield. The Rams, number one defense in everything all year. Aaron Donald's out there. The Packers hang 30-plus on him. I do think this was the best evidence, Jenna, that we've had to date, more than a three-sack game, that this guy is so great and so much better than the second-best defensive player, because the moment he was out of there, the Rams had no chance whatsoever. And so I feel bad for Wild's pick. I still think the pick would have lost, but it was drawing dead the moment Aaron Donald wasn't 100%. Oh,
yeah. Very quickly.
Wilds was bothered. Aaron Rodgers was
okay,
not.
Enough of this.
Packers,
guys,
they host the NFC Championship game next week.
That's so nasty.
We're going to talk about this. Why we keep showing it to you is Pinto Ron. It will be Nick Wright. It'll be Nick Wright pretty soon. First things first. Mike, thank you.
Vic, it's so nasty.
In honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Kurt Menefee and Michael Strahan host an hour-long special that highlights the efforts of athletes creating change in their communities. It's going to be awesome, and we got a bunch of special moments to look forward to. Shannon Sharp will sit down with Bubba Wallace. Kurt and Mike will talk to Deion Sanders on everything he's doing at Jackson State. And Pam Oliver walks us through Renee Montgomery's sacrifices and successes during her sabbatical and the WNBA's unfettered activism. Fox Sports Voices today, 5 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Looking forward to that. Time now for some stories to start your morning, sponsored by Ram Trucks, built to serve. And we head to Kansas City Chiefs without Patrick Mahomes for the final quarter plus after he suffered a concussion. So it was Chad Henne under center, and this came down to a fourth down play, a pass to Tyreek Hill, a pass of all plays. This is it. And it essentially ends the game. Chiefs are moving on. Browns are going home. Nick, I would imagine Alka-Seltzer himself right through this game. How did your Chiefs buddy get the win with Mahomes sidelined?
No Alka-Seltzer, Jenna. No Tums. Might have been chain smoking some Black and Milds. Kids don't do this. They're terrible for you. But my God, that was scary. Folks, I was more nervous with a 12-point lead than I was in the divisional round last year, down 24-0. Down 24-0 against the Texans, like Mahomes, like you still felt like, okay, Bill O'Brien's going to do something dumb. The Chiefs are going to get going. But once Mahomes goes out and they get the field goal on the drive where he got hurt, it was pretty clear the Chiefs were done scoring points. And so then you're just asking the defense to hold on for dear life. And credit to the defense, Chris Jones made a huge play getting a hurry on Baker Mayfield on a 3rd-and-11 that forced the punt. And then Chad Henne and Andy Reid combined for some of the gutsiest play calls I've ever seen. The 3rd-and-4, he throws it out in the flat and they complete it. 3rd-and-14, Henne goes and runs. And then if people are killing Romo this morning, Brandon, because he was saying, oh, they're not going to run a play. Everyone knows they're not going to run the play. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because nobody thought they were going to run a play. Maybe they were going to go for it eventually. But what they were going to do, everyone thought, was try to draw them off sides, call timeout with one on the play clock, and then figure out, are we sneaking it or punting it? And maybe sneak it there. You only need inches. But to end up running a play that is designed for Patrick Mahomes, when Patrick Mahomes is in the locker room after Chad Henne 10 minutes prior, Brandon, had thrown an arm punt into the end zone, the faith in his players, the faith in Henne, the faith in Tyreek to catch it, it was as gutsy of a play call as I've ever seen. Because if they don't pick that up, Brandon, I think they lose. Baker's got a minute 20 at midfield, a touchdown beats you.
100%.
I think they lose if he doesn't pick it up.
I mean, going back to the play before this, Chad Henne scrambling, I mean, and taking off and picking up 13 yards when it was third and 14. The first thing I thought about was, wow, this Cleveland Browns defense is about to stand up, and they're going to get the ball back in Baker's hands, and he's going to score. This is going to go down as one of the greatest games for, you know, the Cleveland Browns have ever played in. And then Chad Henne came in and did what he did. Andy Reid calls, you know, sprint right option on fourth and inches. Because I was sitting there thinking the same. I was like, all right, situational football, what are they going to do? They'll probably let the clock run down, maybe even take the penalty and then punt it. That's what I thought. And then he ran, and I just jumped out of my chair like, oh, my goodness, they ran it. And then they went sprint right option with fourth and inches. So I thought it was an interesting call. It's something that I don't think 99% of the coaches in the NFL would have called or even expected. But you got to give props to the Cleveland Browns as well. This is the type of game that you want to be in, Wilds. You got to think about that. Like, in the fourth quarter, you're in it. If you stop Chad Henne, if you stop this offense, you're getting the ball back to an offense that is starting to click through the run game. And now you're giving Baker the best opportunity to get the job done through the air, because you have to load the box, because that run game started to get going in that second half, which made this offense dynamic. So hats off the Cleveland Browns. They just didn't get it done towards the end on that defensive side.
See, Brandon, I felt the exact opposite of Nick. I felt totally confident in the Chiefs, and for two reasons. One, the fact that Chad Henne played week 17, and once he hit that Kelce pass, throw the interception out the window. But I was like, oh, this guy can get it done. And two, Nick, that was the same play or similar play that they ran against Miami. So the idea that this play was like that scary, it's a 1 yard pass. I don't know if it's the gutsiest play call you've ever seen. And then you're trusting your defense if you're at the 50 yard line, the Browns have no timeouts. So I think their bravado and confidence that I've made fun of you the whole time, now you're seeing it on display. They're not scared of the Browns and they're willing to make that play. I didn't think it was that gutsy. They just ran that same play against Miami and it worked.
Okay. Wilds, I adore you, but you just said two of the craziest things I've ever heard. First one was, throw that interception out. No, I'm not throwing the interception out. The interception was horrifying, a terrible decision, and could have lost them the game. They're in field goal range, up five in the fourth quarter. Second of all, you're like, hey, here's this play they ran with the most talented player ever. Of course they're going to run it with a 40-year-old Michigan quarterback who has five career wins. No, they're not. No, they're not. It was to run it as if Mahomes is out there when the alternative was. And by the way, I think it's a little bit of a compliment to Baker, because the alternative was punt it, give Baker a minute 10 to go 90 yards. And they said, no, he might be able to do that. Instead, we're going to trust Chad Henne. I mean, I was freaking out. I'm never nervous with Mahomes out there.
I spent two years with this guy. You know how many times I saw him do this after throwing the ball in the dirt? That's the only thing I thought about. He starts sprinting right. Like, oh, no.
Oh, my God.
We got a lot to talk about this week. Much more now on Undisputed. We'll see you tomorrow.